Welcome to the Association Strong podcast, where we offer insight from both a seasoned association exec and an entrepreneur. I'm Dave Will.
And I'm Tom Morrison. Listen in as we discuss and debate hot topics in the association community. Don't forget to subscribe and share us with your friends.
Tommy Bahami, welcome back.
Big Dave, guess what's going on today, my friend?
I think I know. You're moving into your new pad, right?
Not just moved. Tom Morrison Associates and the Metal Treating Institute moved last week into our new offices in White House, Tennessee, and they look sharp. It looks amazing.
A lot of these people are listening, but I can see your background. It looks clean, man. There's not a fingerprint on any one of those walls.
There's not a single piece of wood that is old in this place. They literally had to strip it down with ceiling, walls, floor, and redo every floor joist while it was still standing. It was incredible, the project and what the team did. So we're excited to walk into a bright new finish and know that this building is going to create lives changed over the course of the future.
There's no dust. And you know what else there's nothing of? There's nothing on your walls. So what's the deck? Like, how are you? Do you have a theme? Are you going the way for decorating your office? What are you going to do there?
Every office is going to be decorated. My wife, Deanna, man, she's the decorator. She's got an interior design degree. So she is totally in her element in here trying to figure out what to do. We have a nice coffee cafe where you can come in and sit down and make coffee and danishes. Even you as a friend could stop by. We're going to be better than a Starbucks. We built it that way.
Even a friend can stop by?
Anybody.
I don't have to pay you?
Well, you might have to put $5 in the honesty jar for a danish and a coffee.
Probably in the swear jar is where my $5 is going to go.
Yes, that's where you're going, my friend, the swear jar.
All right, Tom.
I'm excited about today's guest.
This person, Amber Worthen. Hey, Amber.
Hey.
That was a really awkward start. But anyway, this person, Amber, I met her at ASA annual meeting in August. And just for, I don't love doing the timestamp, but I'll do a timestamp. This is now, what is it? End of October. It's almost Halloween 2023. And I met Amber at annual, and she's from the Salt Lake City. She happened to be in Boston where I live. I met with her in person to talk shop. And I'm just really intrigued by the work Amber's doing. She used to work for, oh my goodness. Amber, what was the association you used to work for before you started ASW?
I worked for the Physical Therapy Association for 7 years.
That's right. Like American Physical Therapy. Okay. So APTA. And she, family reasons and all this other stuff, decided to go off and start your own business called ASW Communications, which emphasizes more than anything else on email marketing. And number one, what I love about that is the niche, right? You're not you're not a marketing consultant. You're not coming in and looking at things necessarily from only a strategic high level work with the board on messaging and stuff. It's very, very specific to email marketing. And email marketing, whether we like it or not, is still the primary medium of communication and convincing people to take out their credit cards and do something, whether it's renewals or sign up for a conference or sign up for certification or whatever. That's what people are doing the most of is email marketing. So I thought it'd be really cool to talk to Amber about just that.
Well, I'm excited about that, Dave, because marketing, one of the best marketers I've ever read from and listened to said that more than being passionate about your product, you need to be passionate about your marketing. If you're not passionate about the marketing, the product doesn't matter. And so I'm excited to hear Amber's take and just her philosophy and systematic way to go about marketing to have success. Because that's what we all spend tons of time and money doing, is trying to find out what's the message, what's the means, and how do we get people to be motivated to do something, which is typically give us money.
Amber, why do we all hate email so much?
I think we all hate email so much because, one, the person running email at associations never really signed up for the job. I think it gets tacked on a lot. They don't know what they're getting into. Two, higher ups always say that they know email is still king in the communication space, but they're not following best practices for email. So they're saying email everyone 100 times this week, and hopefully something will stick and someone will buy something. So it turns into a very stressful situation.
And that works, right? To a certain degree.
To a point.
People do buy stuff.
Yeah, eventually, or they'll unsubscribe because they're really annoyed. So yeah. I think that's the main reason. And I just think the bulk of content, I think a lot of times we try to make our emails too big and too hefty. And so we get content burnout.
I like all that. So let's tell me a little bit about you and ASW. So you used to work for APTA. You're in Salt Lake City. You weren't when you worked for APTA. Is that right?
No, I lived in Washington, D.C. for 10 years. Height of COVID, moved back to Salt Lake City where I was born, just to be closer to family. So
and that is a big part of the reason why you're no longer with APTA.
No, I actually broke off when I still lived in DC. This was pre-COVID. APTA would not let me work remote. And I just had a hard time understanding that, considering that I was managing their website and their email platforms.
And that stuff all had to be done in physically, right?
Nice.
Not at all.
I just wanted to clarify.
Not at all. Maybe 1 or 2 days a week. Maybe. So I was just kind of sick of the grind, sick of all the work, and just kind of tired and ready for something new. And I had recently had a kid and found that there was a hole in the market, that there wasn't another company supplying people specific for email to associations for staff gaps, which was really surprising to me because email.
Wait, say it again in slower or using different words. What is the gap you saw?
Staff gaps. And filling it for with email professionals. So, but I went on maternity leave.
Yeah.
I called HireLogic and said, can you put a body here for 10 hours a week?
Just because you were heavy into informs. That's why you called HireLogic.
That's who we were using at the time. Yeah. And said, you know, can you put a body in here? We'll even write the content for you. We just need someone to design it, test it, send it. And they said no. And so that's really where ASW Communications was born, was just taking previous association staff like myself. I have a team of six and we all have association experience, and helping fill these gaps on email marketing or communications overall to help associations keep going even when they're down a person.
So let me just stop you there for a little plug now. And this is not why we have you on to plug ASW, but it's going to happen anyway. I had you on because I want to talk about this topic. But ASW, what is the best way to reach you? Like, what's your email? Let's start there.
Yeah, my email's amber@aswcommunications.com. Feel free to email me there. And also our website is our name, aswcommunications.com.
All right. So you left APTA. You have a team of six, which is pretty impressive to have a team that big that quickly, given how it's only been a year that you've been out on your own.
I've been on my own for 4 years, but we've really only been growing for two.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what kinds of organizations do you think, like, obviously the big organizations are going to have a dedicated marketing team. Isn't APTA a pretty darn big organization? I mean, you don't get much bigger than that when it comes to associations. How is it that they don't have a marketing team why do they outsource it to you? Like, I would think they'd have people.
I think that's a big question to walk through, Dave, because I think we're at a stage with the labor shortage and stuff. People are looking to outsource marketing, looking to outsource meetings. There's all these social media. There's all these things they're looking to outsource. So, Amber, I'd be interested to hear that. What questions should associations be asking themselves to determine, do we have the bandwidth to just do it in-house, or should we, instead of hiring a 40-hour week person, we only need 10 hours? What do we go through?
And before you answer that, Tom and I are always fighting for, we actually do way more talking than our guests most of the time. That's so rude. Anyway, but what I want to tack on to that is I have a friend named Ari Mizell. He's a productivity expert, not in the association space. He's outside of this space, but general productivity. And he has this book called Less Doing, really good book. It's old. It's kind of an older book at this point, but he has a three-step process becoming more productive. And it's optimize, automate, outsource. So take a look at a process. In this case, let's take a look at your communication process, your email marketing process, whatever. Break it down into little bites. And let's figure out how can we make this process better for us and for our end users. Like, let's really optimize the process. What are we doing that we don't need to do? What can we, okay, so take that process. Now figure out in this process, and there's a lot you can do around automation, but in this email marketing process, what could we automate now? And that's kind of a fun conversation. And then the third thing is, okay, for the stuff we can't automate, like proofreading, for example, what can we outsource to, especially to a group like yours? All right, so with that, go ahead.
Yeah,
let's talk about this topic.
So the large associations we work with, they do have full marketing and comms teams, even their medium-sized associations. So we're talking, you know, 40, 50 staff and above. Typically, they have marketing and comms teams established.
As did APTA.
Yes. APTA has a full marketing team. They've got a full comms team. With the large associations, what tends to happen is staff gap happens. Someone goes on maternity leave. We have some lose someone. We just need to fill a seat for 3 to 6 months, whatever it is. So those tend to be shorter contracts. The other thing across the board, small, medium, large associations, you cannot get to everything. No matter how many people you have, your list is just growing. It's not like APTAs of the world that have, you know, five people on marketing suddenly can get to everything. It just never ends. So they oftentimes will make a list, just like you're saying, okay, these are all the things we need to do. This is what we need to automate. They'll make a list and say, we are not going to make it to this. And honestly, those automations are what typically trips up a lot of associations. They know there's power in automation. They know they should be building good campaigns with good content that will just run for them, but they don't have time to make it. And that's a big thing of what we do is we go in and we help these associations get their to-do list done. Just whatever it is, if it's a matter of a couple weeks or a couple of months, just to say, let's just help you get this stuff going. So you're successful and don't have to keep stressing about that onboarding campaign that you haven't updated since 2019 that we need to get to. I did that last week for someone.
All those special projects, you know, you're right. We're so busy putting out fires and doing our day-to-day operations. Like these special projects that require an hour of deep think or 2 hours or 3 hours. Like it doesn't sound like much over the course of a month or so.
Oh.
But like to actually set aside, and I struggle with this too, to set aside that time to work on that.
And associations, you know, if they're good at planning, they can look at their goals for the year. I mean, as we're heading into 24, you know, what tends to happen is we have all these goals for 2024, but we kind of don't really get to them because we're so busy all day, every day. Come Q4 of 2024, we're getting calls out, you know, out the wazoo, just everyone saying, oh my gosh, we need help.
I don't think you can say that anymore, out the wazoo. That references your butt, and I don't think you can say that.
Cancel that.
Well, you know what?
Actually, I love that, out the wazoo. Let's leave that.
I just heard a great speaker that talked about change, and he said, you know, change is simple, but the work is difficult.
Yeah.
I think about something simple as, you know, just social media, trying to keep yourself socialized out there. And I have this common thread that I want to do. All I want to do is take 30 seconds to do one post at 2 o'clock in the middle of the day saying what was exciting on my desk for my association that day. And just do that on a consistent, disciplined basis. And you keep yourself out there. But even when it's on my to-do list, what I find is I get to 3 o'clock and go, holy crap, I didn't do my 30-second post.
That's the work, isn't it?
But work isn't easy, especially if you've got a staff of 40 with a ginormous membership and you're trying to touch all the stakeholders in the different segments you have. It's a challenge for sure.
You know, and that's a huge point, Tom, what you just mentioned. If you don't do that social media post every day at 2, nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to fall apart. Like nothing breaks. And same with this, Amber, if a client, or not even a client of yours, but if somebody chooses not to update their new member onboarding, nothing breaks. So what we're talking about is how do we make things better? Tom, how do we make our world better by engaging more in social media? Amber, how do we help our clients, or how do associations make their communications better by dedicating a little time to improvement? And that's the work, Tom, that you're talking about, I think.
Well, let's redefine what's not broke, because we don't know what's broke because we don't know what it would have been had I been so doing Facebook and Twitter and Instagram posts at 2 o'clock every day for a year. At that level, I would then see it broke a year from now if I didn't do it for a week, because everything that we had built to, we had let it drop. But we don't know, when you haven't built something yet, you don't know what you're not breaking yet. So that's where I want to, as an association, I want to get really consistent about, we have a staff of four. I'd like everybody in our staff at 2 o'clock to post out on some channel we have, just what was big on your day today? Because everybody at a desk has some victory or win at their desk that they could show, that they could post out. Maybe it's a new member. Maybe it's a just signed a new speaker in the meetings arena for our conference. Something that keeps members looking and going, wow, there is a lot of stuff going on at our association. Because when they don't see that, they don't realize what y'all you're doing.
And just being curious, I mean, like, that's the big part of this is, you know, to innovate your email, let's say, the biggest thing, we just get so stressed and bogged down. But I love what you're saying, Tom. If we did one thing every day, which in the email world would be like, let's look at our statistics. Let's plan out my next test for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If you're watching, if you're taking 15 minutes every day to say, how did those emails perform, you know, the last couple of days? What's my A/B test going to be tomorrow? Looking at the schedule. If you had a mindset of that, man, your email innovation and your ability to communicate well to your members based on data would skyrocket.
All right, let's talk about that for a second. So you just touched on two things that associations can do to do email better. I'm shifting a little bit from the esoteric sort of let's work on the business as opposed to in the business.
I was just seeing that. Same exact word, Dave.
Yeah, we got to get out of the weeds and get more into this, the bird's eye view of the business sometimes. And that's really hard to do when you're weed whacking. So having said that, what are the things that, given your experience with all your clients and APTA and in your life in associations, what are the things that most associations could do better to improve their communications via email?
Hard.
Well, because you mentioned so many statistics. Let's break it down into statistics.
Let's start with statistics. Yes. Yeah. Being aware. So we say that everything should be data driven. And this is one of the challenges marketing and comms teams see all the time, or C-suites just kind of throwing down, you need to do XYZ. Well, why? Where's the data behind that? And to be able to go back and say, actually, that's not working. Here's the proof via data. So take a general conference promo, for example. You're talking to a client last week who sends out, no joke, 80 emails to promote their conference, their annual conference. And we said, holy crud. And
over what period of time is that?
What?
Over what period of time?
Like 4 months. Like not long enough to be ever justifying 80 emails. Anyway, to just promote a conference.
Essentially, it's, if I'm doing my math right, that's one a day for every business.
It's crazy. They segment some of it. So some of them, you know, like it's hitting different people at different times, but still. Yeah. So we come in and say, well, how's that been performing? What's the return rate been? How many people have, you know, done this? What's the data? What's working? What's not out of all those emails? They didn't know.
What do you think is some of the most important metrics to look at to identify performance?
Clicks, for sure.
Clicks.
Opens have always been flimsy. They're getting flimsier. So clicks.
You made me so happy saying that. I couldn't agree more. Yet, it's amazing how many people still look at open rates.
Totally. Flimsy, but clicks are key. And so then looking at your data and saying, okay, people are clicking on this. They're not clicking on that. They don't care. Oh, this group of people are clicking. We should nurture them to a sale, right? We need to be funneling people based on clicking. That's the big key.
And the I just want to go back to open rates for a second. I find open rates and Prop Fuel, our primary medium of communication is email, right? We do SMS as well, but our primary medium of communication is email, and Prop Fuel works. It complements broadcast email like Informs and Real Magnet and Pardot and so on. Having said that, OpenRate does a good job at comparing one campaign or email blast to another email blast at an aggregate. I think where a lot of people get confused is they think that the open rate is actually relevant to people opening an email or seeing an email. And that is, there's not a relationship between people seeing an email and the open rate. But a higher open rate is always better than a lower open rate when comparing in an A-B test. Fair to say?
Yeah, for sure.
So you did something better. Mm-hmm. More emails had the opportunity to be viewed if the open rate is higher. So a higher open rate when comparing A to B in a certain window of time is good. Mm-hmm. You can't compare open rates from a year ago to open rates today.
Yes.
It doesn't work.
What defines an open email?
Do you want to take that, Amber, or you want me to take that?
Well, it's tricky because some things that have happened over the last couple of years have impacted it. Something has to view it and or open it to some degree. Now, with the Apple update that happened last year, was it last year? The fall before? It's been a minute.
That was last year.
Now, Apple has, their system is actually opening emails. It's not a user clicking it and opening an email. It's actually a computer opening emails. So you saw a big inflation the beginning of last year on all your opens, and people were stoked. They thought their emails were killing it, but they weren't. It was actually computers that were doing it. And now we've kind of evened back out because of a variety of things. But so it just depends.
So if I could add to that, it's very specifically centered around images. And if an image is, it pops up on your email, it's seen as opened. And what Apple did is they said users have the option using Apple systems, which is a very high percentage of Apple users, surprisingly, whether it's on your phone or computer or whatever. But what Apple said is if people opt out of sharing that, they're just going to say it's opened. Across the board, and I think the number was like 94 or 96% of people opted out and said, I do not want to share that information. So all of a sudden, 94 or 96% of people using Apple were registering as that email having been opened solely because they opted out. And so that distorts the numbers completely.
I guess I asked that question because I know my habit of looking through the email, I'm looking at the summary on the left, and I'm going down the email, and I see the detail on the right. And if all the if you've shared too much detail in that initial screen, I don't click in. If I've got what I need, I just move on. So does that count as an open rate or non-open rate?
If an image opened on your screen, or if you opted out of sharing, it is opened.
Mm-hmm. So when I click down the summary on the left, the little tiny emails, and the big email on the right pops up. The moment it pops up, the image is open.
It's opened.
Okay. Yep. I wanted to clarify that because I was a little uncertain that myself. I've never really asked that question.
And I think that's why Amber is saying like the click-through is really valuable. What I've also heard our clients talk about is the effectiveness. I mean, this is ultimately the best metric, which is the conversion, right? And so every email, generally, there's a goal. You want somebody to do something, register for the conference, renew their membership, download this thing, sign up for a course, sign up for a certification. Like those, that's the conversion. So the true measure is how many people did that email get to renew? Mm-hmm. But of course, there's everything in between and the nurturing and so on. So I love the click through as a performance metric. Talk to me about, you said another thing that associations should be doing a little more of is testing. Be more specific. Tell me a little bit more about what associations should be testing.
Yeah. If we're getting any degree of content burnout or just wondering what to do. I mean, we should know how our members want their emails, what they respond to. And the only way to do that is with testing. So A/B testing your subject lines, your friendly froms, your pre-headers, your hopefully if your system's able to do it, you can also test bodies of content. If you're thinking, man, this newsletter is really wordy, would our members like an image in here? You can A/B test that content, your usual whirly wordy stuff against a less words, one picture type of situation. This is where just getting curious, like I said, is what's critical, is being aware of data and then just thinking, I wonder what they're going to think about this, and picking up a new test. We're testing stuff every single week. We are always testing things.
Do you recommend certain, well, I mean, I'm dabbling into AI right mm-hmm. now in this question, but do you recommend any kind of tools to optimize subject lines, text, body text, and so on?
For sure. So subjectline.com is a great resource to test it out, get some different ideas. And then, yeah, I mean, we use ChatGPT all the time, especially myself and having a remote workforce. I like to have something to throw ideas at and just say, hey, I'm thinking about this. This is the content of my email. What do you think? ChatGPT will spit out a few options. Now, are they terrible? Yes, but they get my wheels spinning. And I think, you know what, that's close, but this is what it really should be. Thanks for the assistance. Right.
I've never seen one that's terrible. Just to use your words, you have?
Yeah.
Okay. I would argue the prompt was terrible then.
I probably prompted wrong. Yeah, you're probably right. Or the content of the email was really bad and then it was confused, which also is saying something too.
I think with the right prompt or series of prompts, you can get some really good stuff and then become an editor. So as we like to say, and Tom, I don't think you know about this. I'm super excited about this. We just released what's called blueprints, and blueprints are a way for you to like literally press a button and based on your domain and some variables that you plug in, it creates a whole new member onboarding campaign in Propfuel using our expertise in what works in terms of questions. Mm. But then on the landing pages, it has AI generated content very specific to your association. So like literally in a click of a button, you can see all this stuff like rushing through in this progress bar. And it's so cool to see like huge amounts of content get created. What would normally take someone on our team or your team, you know, several hours to build, it's getting created for you in like 30 seconds.
Take it one step further, Dave.
Yeah.
So for someone like us, it'd be awesome if someone asked a question that was relevant to one or two of the surveys that we had, one of the two of the operational check-ins that we had done, and it could read that and use that and be able to spit that back out when I type in, like, you know, Betty Bot is kind of the new association's.
Robert Burns, new CEO.
So if somehow Betty Bot was linked in and connected to all of our operational check-ins and someone said, hey, what are business owners doing out there now with drug testing, given we're in a drug, we got a labor shortage, are they including it or not? And we've done questions on that because it's a real issue for businesses, and it's able to read that and spit it back out as a part of its dialogue. You know, so having AI tools be able to sink into what we're asking and delineate that back to the person asking the question would be very powerful. It's giving usage to all the data that we're collecting in terms of our questions. And it could give some usage to the questions that people are asking about membership and value and retention and that kind of stuff. It could give them some data and stats, you know, as they go down that path.
So, Amber, I don't know what my question is, but let me just throw a topic out there, and I really like to hear your thoughts on it. And this is a little self-centered because it's centered around the world I live in. Right, but I don't quite want to say the enemy of Propfuel is broadcast email, but I believe that email has been so abused. It's been an abusive relationship with users and recipients for decades. Like decades, we've been taking email and putting everything we can think into it to send it out to people. And it's turned into this thing where we get hundreds of emails every day and a small percentage of them are relevant to us. Mm-hmm. So with associations, that kind of, we believe the problem is that's fallen into the mix. And it's because everybody's talking at us, constantly just talking at us. And so what we're trying to do on our end is switch it up. We want to listen. So do you, how do you, I'm trying to come up with a question now, because I want to hear your perspective that you're deep into this world of broadcast email. Okay, here's my question. It's a little aggressive. Do you see that as a problem, broadcast being talking at people?
I think in the association space, we actually aren't broadcasting that much. The corporate space is what's burning people out. Like, if you've recently gone shopping somewhere, like I did last weekend, I've gotten 10 emails from somewhere I went shopping on Friday. Like, that's crazy. Mm. That's a lot. Yeah. I don't think associations are broadcasting generally
emails to promote a conference in 4 months.
And that's crazy. That's what I was
going to say. My guess is they're not listening much. Yeah. It's them saying, we have a conference. Here's all the stuff happening. No. Here's what's going on. Click here. There's no opportunity for people to engage. And I'll bet if somebody hits reply to, it's like a do not reply email or some mass email just goes into a folder that nobody ever sees.
Right. So definitely we need to be more conversational. I don't think we're broadcasting as many emails as corporate. I think corporations are what's burning out our inboxes, unfortunately. I think with associations, yeah, for sure. The biggest problem we see is that we're not being conversational. We're not creating a relationship the way we're communicating to people. So like if we're always talking about member engagement, but like, member engagement is like actively working and nurturing and managing a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like I frequently am going into associations and reading their emails as someone who knows basic info, right? Like I've talked to one of the people on their staff. I've looked through their website. I'm now going to start consuming their emails as if I'm a member. And even though I'm not part of that as trade, you know, I'm not a PT or something, but just as a general person who knows very little about the association, what are you saying to me? What are you communicating to me all the time as an individual? That's the real problem for sure, is we're not communicating like we care about these people. We see them. We want their feedback. A lot of times we just see like we're constantly asking them for stuff. Right? Register for this conference, sign up for this webinar.
Asking them for money. Yeah, asking them for money.
You're not a good friend. I'm not going to give you my money all the time.
Or you're asking for information, like a survey. Right? So like, give me your information, just take 15 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. Just give me your information or give me some money and sign up for this. I couldn't agree more. You go to the grocery store and you see an old friend. Like, let's imagine, I sometimes dread going to the grocery store because I don't want to. I've actually driven out of my way. This is so awful. I've driven out of my way to go to a grocery store where I know I'm less likely to see people I know because I don't want to talk to anybody.
I love going to Dave's house because he has a general store right next door to his house that you can walk and get candy, ice cream, milk, staples. And I've loved staying at his house. I just get up and go, my wife's talking to his wife. I go sneak over to the next door and grab some candy.
100% chance of seeing somebody you know there. You know, that's the thing. It's small. In fact, just a little anecdote. It's Steve Carell owns the general store right next to our house. He lived around here and still does down like one town over now, but he owns the little general store next to our house. So when I go to the grocery store, occasionally though, I do see somebody that is a very good friend and I'm just so happy to see them. Right. So put yourself in that headspace for a second. Somebody I care about. And I run up to him and I'm like, and I'm thinking of somebody, Mark, my buddy Mark. I'm like, Mark, haven't seen you a couple of weeks. What's going on? Or, dude, you look tan. Where'd you get that tan? Or what's going on with the kids and how's school going? Or I'll ask them something because I care about them and I want to have that exchange. Mm-hmm. Right. when there's people you don't care about, really what you want to do is just tell them things like, this is what's going on with me, 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 me. And so to me, that's the difference between the broadcast and the listening. When you really care about something, somebody, you want to hear what they have to say about things.
Mm-hmm. So I ask a question.
I just turned this into a total pitch for PropFuel. Sorry.
Yeah. And I would just say too, like as a small business owner and working with small associations, the way they communicate to their members are very different because they feel those members, right? When they get 10 members in a week, they feel that.
Impactful.
They feel it.
Yes.
Right. Yep. They're passionate. Their emails are genuine and passionate. You start heading up in size and money in an association. And it's like, does your sales team, this is what I always wonder. I've never been able to ask this to an association, but maybe I will with the next client, is your sales team that's working so hard to get your members, are you asking them how happy they are and how excited they are and all these things that they're landing these sales of getting these members to do all these things? We're not conveying that in an email, right? Like, I'm stoked when I get a client. I am so excited. I'm so thankful. And I convey that in the way that I'm emailing them. I talk to them. I send them a little gift. Like, I let them know I am so grateful. What are we doing once we're bigger and we're processing, thousands of memberships a year?
That's a great point. So how do you take that passion, the human element that you're talking about, mm-hmm. where you're doing things very manually, right? You're emailing somebody directly. You're writing out a unique email directly. How do you scale that mm-hmm. so that like the bigger organizations like APTA or Air Force Association, like some big associations, how do they do that in a way that where they can connect at the individual level?
Mm-hmm.
Amen, sister. That's the hole that we're filling. That's what we're trying to do. Anyway, so yeah, I'm gonna try to stop pitching PropFuel. I just get super excited about this topic.
It is exciting, and it is a good. It's important because I think one, it's automating. I cannot stress enough the importance of onboarding dash welcome campaigns. The way that you are bringing someone into your organization, or what I like to call re-onboarding campaigns. So those people that are renewing, what are you telling them? What are you talking to them about? Are they just getting your general automated email out of your AMS that says, thank you, here's your receipt?
Okay. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah.
Right.
Good luck this year.
Yeah. So like I've been sharing the story recently is I joined a member-based organization this year, and I've always known that welcome campaigns are so important, but this organization I joined this year, they have zero onboarding, zero mm-hmm. welcome campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined, I paid a good chunk of change, and I heard nothing.
Yeah.
I go to my first event. I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's do this. I'm going to get my, bang for my buck. I go, okay, fine. It was good. But like fast forward 6 months, I'm still a little skeptical. I'm still questioning, why do I need this membership? I don't understand the organization. I don't understand my role in it. I don't understand why they think like I need to pay this much money.
Amber, in 6 months from now, actually probably in 3-4 months from now, you're going to get an email saying, hey, renew, please. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be like, yeah, I don't know.
Can I just connect with all my new friends on LinkedIn and get a lunch once in a while?
Mm-hmm.
No, and it's just really reinforced me how critical those welcome campaigns are, your engagement campaigns in the middle. So if you should be watching, again, back to that data point, once you've onboarded someone, you've got a set of time for 4 or 5 months before you should be hitting anyone with a renewal question. How are they performing? Are they answering? Are they looking at emails? Are they communicating a bunch on your community? Like, who are these people? Where are they? And, there's plenty of data tools that can kind of help pull that out for you and identify who's not engaging, who's at risk of not renewing, and reaching out to them with a different conversation.
Wouldn't you say that it's probably the time to get them engaged is right in the first 3 months, because you joined that organization for a specific reason.
Yes.
And they failed to figure out what that specific reason was and just jump all over that. Because
mm-hmm.
that'll keep you busy for 6 months if they would have tagged into. So, Amber, why did you join? What can we do to help you be excited in that area right. with us.
And this is why we're excited you're here. This is how you fit in. You know, like the conversational aspect of this, you know, ProfFuel is fantastic for asking those questions, but also there's organizations that we've worked for that are very, when you meet the people in person, they're very people centric, right? They want their right. people, but their emails are cold. Their emails are like, here you go. Here's your stuff. I'm like, where's the warmth? When you're at conferences, you guys are hugging and kissing each other. You guys are so people friendly, but your emails are so cold. How are we, you know, bringing that in and warming stuff up to match our culture?
So Dave, I know we're coming around the corner. Go ahead, make that point.
Yeah, I want to, I think we do need to get to that final question that we always ask. But before we do, Amanda Kaiser, huge fan of hers. I think I've promoted this book in just about every podcast because I really am a true believer in it. Elevating Engagement. Have you read this, Amber?
No, I need to.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. But it talks about Tom's point and your point right there is like the time to engage a new member is mm-hmm. immediately in that first 3 weeks to mm-hmm. draw them in with questions, get to know them, ask them things, give them things based on how they're answering. Like that whole concept of everything that we're talking about here is what she preaches. And also, I think you guys probably know this, but the people most likely not to renew are new members.
Yep.
If you can get them to renew after the first year, then you've probably got them for a few more years. All right, Tom. So, Amber.
Well, real quick, what I want Amber to land on and end on is real quick. So, Amber, you know, I heard a great quote this past week that says, you know, when we see bad behavior and we don't show what new behavior looks like, we normalize the old behavior and they just keep doing it. And that's, I think that's the moral of the story of what a lot of associations do. They just keep doing the old behavior. And so what are some, from your expertise, what are two or three new behaviors associations need to just like say, you know what, we're going to start doing that next week. What are a couple of tidbits people listening in this that they could take away and say, that's, we want to start doing that next week.
Oh, that's a good question,
that's
Tom.
That's a good question. One, testing. You can't just keep broadcasting at your members if you don't know what they like to hear about, when they like to get it, anything like that. Test to know who your members are. Add into the bigger puzzle. It's just one data piece. Hopefully you're doing surveys and other things, but one piece is how do people even want to get your emails? And then two, I would really say, go take a look at your welcome and onboarding campaigns. What does it look like? Have your partner, your mom, your 23-year-old niece read it. People who are in these different age demographics and don't know anything about your organization, what are they feeling off of these emails? What are they understanding about their need to be there and what the value is going to be? Because that first month of membership is just so critical. And if we're not evaluating those welcome and onboarding campaigns regularly, and again, those re-onboarding campaigns, how are we communicating to your members renewing too? Then you're more at risk of losing them.
Awesome.
All right. So at this point, Amber, we close out the podcast with a question for Tom and me, and then we'll wrap it up with you. And the question is, what's your key takeaway? Like, what's either the thing you, but epiphany for you, or what's something you want to leave the audience with? So, Tom, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, mine's pretty simple. Welcome campaigns. Someone came in for a specific, no one really joins an association and throws money away just by saying, I'm just going to join. Something prompted them to join, whether it was a pain point they feel, and they saw a little bit of a solution or something the association is doing that could help. So I'm going to get involved in that. And so I think the welcome campaign is a big takeaway for me to really analyze how are we touching our members in each space within the first 60 days to make sure that we've got them tuned in and running the direction they feel like they need to go to be successful within the association.
I love that. And it's also just to piggyback on that, it's stunning to me how many people think they have a great onboarding campaign, but all they're doing is just telling people things. They're taking this mass email and breaking it up into several little emails.
It's a checklist.
Without knowing why somebody joined or what it is they want. And if you don't have that two-way dialogue, it's half of what it could be. All right. Like literally it's the half of you talking. The other half should be you listening. That's what a new member onboarding campaign should be made of. The thing that for me, the biggest takeaway, the aha moment of this conversation was around Amber's comment that when you're small, you're super passionate about new clients and you're super passionate about new members. And therefore you're going to have these very personal conversations, which oftentimes include an exchange. But the bigger yet, the harder it is to do that. I don't think the desire to do that goes away. I just think the ability to do that apparently goes away. And so that concept gets me excited because that's everything I've been working at is to make that possible for larger organizations. What about you, Amber? What's a big takeaway?
For me, I would just leave with don't get overwhelmed. I feel like these types of conversations overwhelm these staff that, you know, the one person that's doing email or whatever for a quarter of their job and they have all these great ideas. Like, make a plan, write out a couple takeaways. What are you going to do? Take that 15 minutes a day. I love that, Tom, about like, can we just take 30 to 15 minutes a day at this time to do this one thing? And that will skyrocket what you're doing. So if that's 15 minutes a day to check on your testing, you know, 15 minutes next week to look at your onboarding campaign to see when's the last time it even got updated.
Tom, I have a question. Do you, the 2 o'clock LinkedIn update or social media update, do you have anything in your calendar? Do you time block that?
I do. I have every other, I don't have it on for every day. I have it for every other day. And so every other
day. You see it and you just kind of ignore it now? Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't ignore it. When we got meetings going on, when we got live stuff going on, or we do a webcast, I'm more in tune to do it there because there's something actively going on that I can communicate. But if we don't have that going on, like today, I don't have anything going on. But at 2 o'clock, I know I have a couple of great things to communicate if I chose to communicate them on some level at the association. So there's always some exciting thing happening, whether small or big, every day. We just got to take the time to sit down at 2 and say, what was the biggest thing in my pocket right now that I could say to the members if I could?
Yeah. So the time blocking is the interesting one. It sounds like that time isn't working for you. And Amber, the reason I bring this up is because you talk about 15 minutes a week. I love this concept of time blocking. If you're listening to this and you're like, I got to do that, I got to focus more, or my marketing people do, I strongly recommend setting up a block in your calendar where you're likely to see it and do it. See, for me, I time block things in the mornings because that's when I'm fired up, ready to rumble. And I time block things for my mornings so I can do them and I will get them done. And usually it works. All right, Amber Worthen from ASW Communications. And it's what, Amanda at ASW?
Amber.
Jesus. Why did I say Amanda? I wrote down Amanda. Amber Worthen. So Amber at ASWCommunications.com.
That's right.
Rock Amber, on. Nice to meet you. Thanks for being on the show.
Pleasure to meet you. Thank you both.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, good topic. This one's very personal and important to me.
We hope you gained some inspiration that will help you run an efficient and effective association just like a business, and maybe laugh a little with us. If you have a topic you would like to hear us talk about, or if you just want to reach out to us for any reason, you can contact us at tom@tommorson.biz or dave@propfuel.com.
Give us a review if you haven't already, and don't forget, subscribe and share with your friends.